Welcome to the Winter's Business Lunch. Sorry about that. Thought my little music was going to happen. I could sing it for you. No, you really don't want that. Let's kick off the show with CNBC analyst, the wonderful John Nigerian. John, are you safe and sound?
I am indeed, and I hope you are too, Jake.
Very much so. And you are still in Chicago right now, right?
Absolutely. Stuck here. Can't really go anywhere for a while. But I love Chicago.
Yes. Well, it's your hometown. It's nice to have you here as well. Okay. So what is going on today? We were doing well, and then now we're in the negative.
Yeah. I don't read too much into either positive or negative unless they're in the multi-hundred point
right.
range these days. I think you're right that earlier this morning we were down 300 before the market opened. Then we went positive almost immediately once the market did open. We're going to see some rebalancing throughout the day today, and I think that's more or less one of the things that's influencing trade right now. I don't think it's based on news. The president did say that he's going to be formulating a $2 trillion infrastructure bill, which would be fantastic. As far as I'm concerned, it's getting people back to work. And because the infrastructure does need some shoring up, I'd love that. And unfortunately, though, the market is really just focused on what happens at the end of every quarter, which is rebalancing, more than being driven by news of the day.
So you say you don't really focus too much on headlines, and the headline I'm seeing right now is Dow heads for its worst ever first quarter.
Yeah, and again, not surprising to either of us. It's been a terrible quarter. It's been a terrible month. But it was a nice comeback last week. We're still holding on to most of the gains of yesterday, which was the first Monday in a long time that we actually saw some pop to the upside rather than selling pressure, and that was a change of pace. We'll see if we can hold on to that. The German markets, the DAX, that is, finished higher by about 1.25% today. So I think the rebalancing that we spoke of is more or less what has taken us to here, down about 0.8%. And into the final bell, we'll see if they need to rebalance into the right kind of stocks, meaning that the technology stocks would be what would lift us because they are the largest percentage of the Dow and S&P.
I was going to ask you about the technology stocks along with energy and utilities. A lot of people are asking if now's the time to jump back in, make some investments. What would your advice be?
I think we got very close to, if we didn't put in a bottom a couple weeks ago, I think we got extremely close to it. And given the amount of stimulus that's being thrown at the market, I think we're likely to be, whether it's that U-shaped recovery, in other words, where we trundle along sort of flatlining for a while before we go up, what we need is a peak of infections and or mortality to be rolling over. Once we get that, I'm confident that we'll go back to work and that most Americans will have jobs when they want to go back to work because there's so much that needs to be done. And that's my optimistic side of where we are right now.
I love following you on Twitter, and you've had some really creative videos recently on what's happening in oil, and just kind of wanted you to give us a primer on what's going on with the oil industry.
Well, they've overproduced like crazy because, of course, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman over in Saudi, was fighting with Putin, and to a certain extent, both of them against the United States as far as our shale producers, because we've become the largest export nation in the world as far as production of crude oil and so forth. However, I think the issues were that since Russia wasn't falling in line with OPEC and is not a member of OPEC, in fact, MBS wanted to go after Russia. We've seen the pullback of crude oil, which has dropped like 60% since their fight began. And I think they're virtually exhausted as far as where they can put the remaining oil that they take out of the ground now, because they've both ramped up production so severely that there's no storage left, whether it's floating or on land. And that means that we're going to see an end to this pretty soon, because they're not just going to pump it and dump it onto the ground. And I think cooler heads are ultimately going to prevail. President Trump said he was going to have a phone call with Mr. Putin about stabilizing oil prices, not about getting them to jump up dramatically, but at least stabilizing the production levels. And I think that's going to be positive for basically all three major economies.
So, John, what's on your buy list right now?
Well, let's see. We were seeing for the first time in a long time good news out of Peoria. We saw Caterpillar and John Deere out in Moline starting to ramp up production again. And some of it could be that stimulus bill that the president was talking about, because indeed, if it is an infrastructure bill, both those companies do a lot of construction equipment, not just farm equipment. So those were two stocks that we've been buying for the last several days, including today.
And just really quick before I let you go, I know that you're a Bitcoin person. I read something about a federally backed digital dollar. Is that something that you would be for?
I don't think we'll ever see that.
Okay.
Not in the United States.
Okay.
Would it be something I'd root for? No, I wouldn't root for that.
Got it. Okay. Well, thanks so much to John Najarian. Stay safe, stay healthy. And your Twitter handle, John, because people should follow you.
Oh, thank you. It's just J-O-N Najarian, N-A-J-A-R-I-A-N. And thank you for that.
Oh, of course. So many of you are working from home and, of course, connecting through Zoom and Google Meetups and Hangouts and everything else that's going on, Skyping as well. Want to check in with Tom Gimbel. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network. They've been around since 1998. They're a staffing, recruiting, and also a culture firm. And want to check in on Tom and see how it's been working out, all this working from home, how's it been going for your company, Tom?
Well, there's challenges like there are for everybody else, G, but it's one of these things that you can't escape it. So you have to embrace it, and you've got to figure out unique ways to engage with people. But most importantly, and what I've been telling every CEO that I work with, is you've got to be present. You've got to be there for town halls, for video meetings. You've got to lead it, and people need to hear your voice. And most importantly, I think, see your face.
This is really the time for leadership. So I think everybody in the C-suite should be present and in the front of the picture, right?
They should be. Unfortunately, not everybody, A, feels comfortable with that, and B, knows how to do that. And that's the challenge. But the really interesting thing is what people want is they're not expecting any of their leaders to solve every problem. What they do want, and what true leadership is honesty and candor, sometimes the brutal truth, the harsh truth, but presence. They want to know that you're there side by side with them.
It's a little bit like what they say in relationships, romantic relationships. They say, don't try to solve the problem, but actually listen. That's almost more important than trying to solve the problem. That's what you're saying, too.
Yeah, the interesting thing is the difference between relationship is that CEOs aren't from Mars and employees aren't from Venus, because CEOs at one point in time were usually employees. And what we can't forget is the empathy and what it's like and what it means. I've been taking time every day to call or FaceTime 5 to 10 of my staff, rank and file, not people who report to me, just to say hi and that I'm thinking of you. And it takes a few minutes for each call, but it's that kind of connection. I mean, you got to think about this, especially where the listeners of your show are, G. They're in Chicago. They're living in high rises. Most of them are probably, or not most, but a lot of people who are living in small studio or one-bedroom apartments. And if you're not married or have a live-in partner, you're alone. Mm-hmm. You're alone. And work is the one connectivity that we have, and we have to embrace that. Work is a good thing, and we need to show that it's what's holding people together in this crazy time.
Your company, LaSalle Network, you are based here in Chicago, but you also have an outlet in Nashville, Tennessee. You were listed as one of the 100 best companies to work for by Fortune magazine. I'm sure that's something you're very proud of. And you've also worked really hard to maintain. But you say that it's really important that your staff is engaged because you want to make sure there's still productivity. But then you also want to maintain culture. And you say that you're a culture firm. So explain what that means.
So we've been fortunate that our employees and who we hire and who stays with us are people that like our culture. Your culture is only good if people who work there like it. And I mean, it sounds so basic, but you have to hire people who like the culture you have because you can't change it for everybody. And what we've done is we've been on a really nice run of developing an employee-friendly company that over the past 10 years, we've won over 100 culture and been recognized over 100 times by different organizations and publications for being a best place to work. And so what we've done is we work with our clients in placing people and really look at their culture and try to understand it and who's going to fit in and what the communication level and employer branding is so we can work to find the right people for that culture, not just technically. And when you're working with employees, and I've got employees in their 20s and their 30s and their 40s, and it's really, I think we have one in their 50s too. We don't have too old of a demographic, but is to work with people to understand and be appreciated for what they do. But also in this crazy time, Gene, what I've told our staff is you got to work. Because in a time where companies are avoiding layoffs and trying not to do that, people need to produce or else they're not going to get laid off. People who don't produce are going to get fired in any company.
Right, absolutely. One of the ways that you're able to maintain this culture that you're talking about remotely, you mentioned, has been utilizing some of these, like Zoom, for example. That's been something that you've been doing. So talk about what you guys have been doing with Zoom. It's more than just meetings. You guys have been pretty innovative about how you hold these meetings, and some for fun, some for, just checking in to make sure that productivity does stay up.
Absolutely. So we do, number one, we do a company town hall. So a Zoom with every employee at 10 a.m. every morning that I lead. And so every morning, rain or shine, my face, my voice, this is the update, this is where we're at. So, sometimes it's rah-rah, and sometimes it's... Go ahead.
Oh, no, Tom, I was just going to ask, are people mostly are they dressed up, or are they in pajamas, or it doesn't matter?
No, I'd say it's probably about 80% they're wearing a nice shirt or a pullover or something like that. You know, my belief is you got to, like today I'm wearing a button-down, a dress shirt with a pair of jeans. I want to feel like I'm going to work. The initiative that I gave people, and not everyone's taken me up on it, but what I told people is commute to work. Get up in the morning, leave where you live, take a walk back into your house. Get the blood flowing, get some exercise, feel the fresh air, and then go to work. And start to have some normalcy and routine. But to the fun things that you mentioned, we've done 2 times a week virtual happy hours where everybody grabs a beverage of their choice, alcoholic or non, and seeing each other's faces and scrolling on the Zoom screen, you're having a drink with your coworkers. And you're telling jokes and you're laughing and you're making fun of people. The other thing we've done is sunrise yoga. So at 7 in the morning, we started it last week. We had one of our employees, who is a yogi, I believe is the right term.
It is.
She led us on a virtual morning sunrise yoga, and people love that. And then we did an ice cream social where we did after work, where everyone got their ice cream or their popsicles or whatever, and cookies, and we just did something fun.
Also, tell me about
testing the microphone.
Hold on, let me. I turned that off. Okay, sorry about that, Tom. So, also, you've kind of broken it down into stand up, wrap up, and a happy hour as well.
Yeah. So you have to run business as usual, and the key thing is, I want every manager, and our managers lead between 5 and 10 person groups, is that they're going to have morning stand-up meetings where they're going to have Zoom and everybody's going to see each other's eyes. I'm a big believer in being focused and not having your attention span split and multitasking when you're in a meeting. So I want people to be focused and accountable to what's going on and not answering emails or texts at the same time. So we have those. At the end of the day, we have wraps. My executive team of 9 people, We have two video conferences a day at noon and at 4. And so we have these routines. I think it's really important during this time is for people to have routine and schedules of accountability so they know that their coworkers are counting on them. We have an expression in our place, G, called, I am accountable to you.
Wow.
And we really believe that.
Oh, and indeed we are, especially during these times. That can apply beyond the workforce as well, because that's why everyone is staying home, is because we're all accountable for each other. So yes, I am accountable for you. I love the way that you've structured these Zoom meetings into a routine. I think a lot of companies can definitely learn from that. The stand up, the wrap. You start off the morning with the daily town hall meetings. Also a lot of fun. You mentioned the yoga, you mentioned the happy hour, but also you had a virtual piano bar.
Yeah, so we did that last week. Our head of marketing has a friend who is a piano player and a singer-performer. And so we took requests from all of our employees and probably got 20 requests or so, 30 requests. And we had everybody get on for Zoom, including the virtual piano player. And he had an iPad set up on his piano at home with his family. And he played all the requests, Billy Joel, Elton John, R.E.M., for the old people, the whole nine yards, right? And so he did that, and it was hilarious. And everybody was singing, and you saw people dancing, and it was really a shot in the arm of people really just feeling a sense of, it's okay to laugh. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. People are sick, and there's death, and there's economic fatalities going on and layoffs. And you know what? It's terrible. And at the same time, you can laugh. You can find your humor and your entertainment somewhere beyond Netflix, and it can be with your coworkers, and that's okay. It's actually a good thing.
Even the mayor was talking about how humor is going to be critical to getting us all through this. I think what's really cool, too, is that you've been able to utilize some of the skills of your employees and find out more about the people. Like, you're finding out more about your coworkers. Who would have known that somebody that you worked with was a yogi or could play a musical instrument or had a type of skill that they could share with everybody to uplift everyone as we're going through this horrible time? So I think that's a really cool thing. And also, it's a chance for leaders to step into the role of leadership, which sounds like you've been doing.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and it's one of those situations that people just step up and their innate skills. And I've been really fortunate with the team and the tenure that I have, that I've got people at all levels. And what you really need is leaders who do stuff that everybody doesn't see. The person who calls up the employee who looked down in their Zoom picture during the Zoom call, mm-hmm. and they call up and they go, hey, you looked a little sad during the call.
Right.
Or, you know what, you were wearing the same sweatshirt as yesterday. Why don't you go change clothes and feel fresh and put on a nice outfit and feel good about yourself today? And when you have coworkers like that, who aren't in the me phase, but they're in the we phase, it really is transformational. And listen, I don't know, G, where any of this ends up. Nobody, this is the one thing, Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, if he were alive, no one knows where this ends or how it ends. Nobody's seen this movie. So you can't, there is no authority on it. And so when you're going through this, all we can do is lend a hand to help those who need it.
Got it.
Whether it's in your neighborhood, your mm-hmm. company, or your family, that's all we can do. And you got to do it with a smile, because otherwise, no one wants to hang out with the sad person when things are falling apart. They want to be around the optimist.
Absolutely. Thanks so much to Tom Gimbel, CEO of LaSalle Network. A lot more coming up right here on WGN Radio. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Of course, Wintrust Bank is our sponsor, and they're also proud to be a locally run community bank, believing in going above and beyond banking solutions to also being a real asset to the community. And they don't just obviously focus on banking. They find ways to bring people together. And this is a sponsored segment. This is where we interview a Wintrust community leader. And today, that leader is Daniel Blank, CEO and founder of The Place for Children with Autism. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Hi, G. How are you? I just wanted to say during this time, you know, our thoughts and prayers are going out to all the nurses, doctors, first responders, the police, the fire department, the food workers, and
Absolutely.
The people that lost their jobs, mm-hmm. and especially our mayor and our governor.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Definitely. We feel exactly the same way. So, Daniel, it's so good to have you on the show. Tell me a little bit about the Place for Children with Autism.
Sure. Well, it all started with our mission. And our mission is to provide the highest quality therapy to young children with autism, specifically in underserved communities. We're seeing that now that this virus, impacts everybody. But when it comes to autism, treatment is not equal. And this is really, our cause is really more in line with social justice and making sure that all parents have access to great care. So that started about 4 years ago.
Fantastic. So for folks that aren't familiar with autism, what are some of the challenges facing children in particular with autism?
Well, autism is misunderstood. A lot of people think that autism has to do with intelligence, when it actually is a behavioral issue. And if you can treat children when they are young, as early as two, you can actually change the course of their behaviors. We at our centers, a lot of the kids come to us and they're nonverbal. And most parents, if not all parents, want their children to be able to speak and communicate. So that's one of our goals. I'm proud to say that now we've been doing this for 4 years, and every single child that's come through our centers has been eventually able to speak and communicate. So early intervention is critical.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. That's something that you've really discovered in your studies. Of course, you've been studying autism for years, and you say that starting that young at 2 years old is really important.
It's critical. What happens with all of us, specifically also with children with autism, is behaviors become ingrained. And if you can get to a child early and give them intensive therapy, you can actually change the course of those behaviors. We can look at graphs where behaviors go down as communication goes up. So if we have a child who is having behavioral issues, such as tantrums or antisocial behavior, when we see that child increase their communication level, we can see those behaviors, disappear. So early intervention is critical. When you have a child who you work with later in age, it's much more difficult. So we our mission is to work with younger children. Our centers are for ages 2 to 6.
And you have how many locations? And, I know that you're also building more locations as well, but that's temporarily on hold.
We have 7 centers in Chicago, and we have 1 center in Cicero, and we have 1 center in Urbana. And our centers, our model is between 16 and 18 children. The other nice part about that is that we employ from within the communities that we're located. We train people, we certify them in behavioral therapy, and they're well-paying jobs with full benefits. And each one of our centers, if you just look at it on a monetary basis, each one of our centers brings in approximately $750,000 of income into that community.
So you're serving underserved communities on a multitude of levels.
Yeah, it's a really nice circle. I mean, because we really make an effort to hire people in those communities. We put them through intensive training. They're very well-paid jobs. They have full benefits. So it works all the way around. It's a great circle.
So these techniques are part of ABA therapy, which stands for Applied Behavior Analysis. And this also includes, how does this play out in the centers? You say a full day program, and then there are individualized lesson plans.
Yeah, our children get about 30 hours of therapy a week. Each program or each child receives their own individual program. And one of the reasons that it works so well is because we're doing this live, and we have technology that allows us to actually measure what that child is doing in the moment, and we can change course, we can increase, we can decrease, or we can go in a different direction. So they're getting intensive therapy, and it's all one-on-one.
That's fantastic. How are you guys funded, and what can we do to help?
Well, right now we're funded by private insurance. And one of the things that we've been able to do is help people also take advantage of the Affordable Care Act and get insurance. Illinois at the moment is trying to do this through Medicaid, but it's not working as of yet. When that works, we'll adapt to that. I think the best thing that everybody can do in our community is recognize when a child has autism and get that child help as soon as possible. I think education in this area is critical because the earlier the better. It's really important. And I want to just do a shout out to our team, Lee, because there is a way to measure the quality of what you're delivering. And part of our mission, I said in the beginning, was to deliver the highest quality. That's important because I feel that we have a moral obligation to our parents. They're trusting us with their child, and time is irreplaceable, as we're all finding now. And we recently, when we do the test, there's a score out there, and it's I don't want to go into the score, but the score is considered 50 is considered excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Our scores now are coming in at 80, so we're about 160% above what is considered excellent. So I'm incredibly proud of our clinical staff.
That's incredible. And Daniel, before I let you go, are you guys on hiatus right now due to the pandemic, or how are you adjusting?
We unfortunately went through a fairly large growth in the last 4 months, so we had to scale it back a little bit, but we're still operating. We've gone to a telehealth model, which we have rolled out, we're just waiting for things to get better, and then we're going to move, far ahead. I also would like to tell people to go to our Facebook page. We have a live parent support group on our Facebook page that I believe meets on Monday. We also are putting a lot of content out on our YouTube channel. So we're just trying to help as much as we can and keep in contact with parents and help other parents who aren't even coming to our centers.
Well, love that. And I'm sure everyone can use some virtual support right now. Thanks so much to Daniel Blank. He is the Wintrust Community Leader, CEO and founder of The Place for Children with Autism. Wintrust Business Lunch, thanks so much for listening and staying with WGN Radio throughout your day. It's time now for Trending Business Stories with WGN Radio's very own Amy Guth. How are you today, Amy?
Hi, G. How are you?
I'm doing good. So a lot of companies, a lot of research institutions, all pivoting to try to fill this gap in terms of ventilators.
That's right. You know, there's a lot of conversation as we're talking about the coronavirus outbreak around the supplies needed on the front lines from medical providers. And so GE Healthcare and Ford, of course, GE Healthcare based here in Chicago, they are in a Michigan facility going to employ 500 United Auto workers, and in over the course of three shifts, they're going to start building ventilators in a plant in Michigan. They say they'll have 1,500 by end of August, 12,000 by end of May, and 50,000 by July 4th. So that's a really ambitious goal, but that's what they've stepped in to do. Meanwhile, if we shift downstate, a U of I team at Champaign-Urbana and Carl Hospital System, they've come together to form a team, and they created a prototype of a product they're calling the Illinois Rapid Vent, and it's an emergency ventilator that runs a little bit differently. It has a little bit simplified system that it doesn't have as many components as a lot of the ventilators that are seen in hospitals that we hear a lot about when we're talking about reports. But this is one that this is interesting because they're waiting on FDA approval for this still. But the FDA has said, while they haven't approved it yet, it's in the pipeline and you know, all signs point to it being approved. And they've said that right now they encourage, of course, everyone to use FDA approved equipment and devices in this medical crisis and on the front lines of medicine there. But they also said they don't intend to object, and that's their words, they don't intend to object mm-hmm. to modifications as long as they're safe. So I think that's the FDA kind of recognizing, like, hey, there's a lot, and if someone's got a good idea and it's safe, we might kind of push this through. Or if in a moment to save someone's life, if a medical professional wants to use this and they feel it's safe, they're probably going to, you know, be okay and be protected there. So there's that
probably,
similarly.
Yeah, that's smart, I think. Just kind of get rid of the red tape right now because it's about having access to the ventilators that we really need to save lives. And it sounds like the U of I one is it's portable. It's small, right?
That's right. It's a little bit smaller. I mean, it's still pretty expensive. All of them are, but it's more affordable. It's smaller. It's portable. It could be in a lot of, you know, in a lot of settings. That could be that could really make a lot of difference. So a lot of, you know, I'll be watching that to see how that plays out. They're looking for partners. Of course, they need resources. They need some backers. So it'll be interesting in the coming days what they can amass in terms of maybe a corporate partner or a distribution partner or something like that to help fund that a little more. Similarly, Medline, which is a sterilization company, they were in the news a few months ago, several months ago at this point, because of their the way they were sterilizing medical equipment created some emissions. They were doing this with ethylene oxide, which is a cancer-causing chemical. And so they made a $10 million investment in emissions control and got recertified by the Illinois EPA, giving them the green light to return to operations. And what they've said this week is that last week on Friday, they put out this statement saying that they were going to bring back 3 shifts a day to work at their facility to re-sterilize N95 masks. A lot of conversation has been centering around those masks and how doctors are having to reuse them, things like that. Here, they're saying that they will be able to re-sterilize using this ethylene oxide process 100,000 masks per week and then ship them back out to hospitals, which if they can pull that off, that sounds like a huge, huge, support for people on the front lines there.
But they were using this to sterilize medical devices before, and that's what got them into trouble?
Correct. So ethylene oxide, there's another company in the area. It's called Sterigenics. They were their facility was shuttered. Another ethylene oxide facility that was in Willowbrook, and they closed down in August. They said in a statement today that if they had local, state, and federal support, they too could reopen. So it's really a matter of what the company is doing to mitigate those ethylene oxide emissions, because there was a lot of community concern.
Got it.
So that $10 million investment that Medline made to deal with emissions control satisfied the Illinois EPA, and so they were able to green light that. If Sterigenics could join them, it sounds like, hey, we could be doing the same and help you out with equipment. We just need that green light. So it remains to be seen what Sterigenics will do, but if they can make similar adjustments to help mitigate some of those emissions going into the air and soil and groundwater and all that, perhaps we would see that number rise. But still, 100,000 masks per week is pretty significant.
Right. So is this a case where it's the lesser of two evils sort of situation, but the potential danger from this potentially the emissions from a cancer-causing chemical versus folks on the healthcare workers on the front lines need these masks desperately?
Yeah, I mean, I had that thought too, that, especially coupled with here we see the FDA saying use FDA certified equipment, but if you're trying to save someone's mm-hmm. life and you believe this is safe, I think we might see some of these sorts of things relax a little. That said, I'm not sure that that Medline necessarily skirted any environmental laws as much as they made a $10 million investment in their facility to say, okay, we have to close down. We're going to spend $10 million to try to mitigate this and try to fix this. So it wasn't, it wasn't nothing. I mean, $10 million will do a lot in a factory. So, remains to be seen. I think a lot of environmental groups are being watchful to say, okay, yes, I know we need these masks, but we also, for the long haul, need to keep our own air and our families safe. So what does that mean? I think those are a lot of questions that people are answering right now. It's like, well, we need these masks and they do need to be sterilized with this chemical. But in the long haul, that chemical we know is harmful. What does that mean? So it seems like it was a meaningful use of the $10 million for Medline, and they, made some investments to help control emissions at that factory.
So you'll be keeping an eye on that as well, I'm sure. We have about 30 seconds left, Amy. I know John Williams talked a bit about the mayor's stay-at-home videos, but any commentary from you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're really funny. They're making the rounds on social media. In moments like this, to see our leaders leading and giving us clear and accurate information, but also being human beings, I think is really helpful to a lot of people. So really a lot of reaction on social media from Lightfoot about her video saying stay home. I love the decorator one where she's fluffing pillows and you hear a voice go, what are you doing? She says, what am I doing? I'm saving lives, staying home. I also love, there's an Instagram account, of course, Lightfoot earlier this week said she was asked about all the memes on social media. Mm-hmm. What do you think? She said, I've seen them and I like them. You know, she said, I think they're funny. So there's an Instagram account, Where's Lightfoot? And it's all of those memes pulled together on
Perfect.
Instagram.
Well, thank
her,
you.
Like behind a police line looking. It's really cute.
Okay. And it's at Where's Lightfoot. Thank you so much for telling us about that. WGN Radio's Amy Guth. Thanks so much. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.